Welcome to the first installment of Sundance Weekend in the Morning, or The Real, or I'm unclear what the exact name of this is, but I just know
it's the Rick Bruff Show.
Oh sure.
How could you forget that?
Fighting constantly to against the David Darcy Show, which is,
that's been taken off years ago.
David Darcy, film critic for Screen International, who has been co-hosting with us, these many years, back with even with Blair Fulmer, 80s, 90s maybe?
90 was the first year,
yeah.
And it's great to be back here, coming in snow. I can't believe I arrived way before this started, because we're going to have everybody coming late today because of the march is going to affect traffic and the snow is going to affect everything. So be prepared for some long conversations.
Yes.
And a lot of more Rick Bruff than you're accustomed to.
Well, we might end up getting very autobiographical.
Fits in with a lot of the movies.
Where were you born, David? But to start off with, we have an entry in the U.S. documentary competition called Step, and the director is with us, Amanda Lippitz. She came here with 18 girls from a unique school in Baltimore, and the girls are, I guess, prepping to participate in the march.
They are. They're getting ready. They got their step hats on, and they're really excited to. They're always excited to be with a group of powerful women. So,
are they marching, or are they doing any kind of special, you know, demonstration or dance?
Well, I don't think they can dance in this weather, but they will be marching. And just their mere presence, and when they're all together, they're such a force.
So tell us what step refers to. What is step?
So step is a form of dance that uses the entire body. They make music with their bodies, their hands, and their feet. It's a rhythmic type of dance. It started in the mines in Africa when miners could not communicate with each other, so they would stomp and clap through the mines. And in the United States, it evolved. It's become a part of the African American fraternity and sorority culture. It's called the Divine Nine. So it is, in a way, this aspirational sport that was traditionally linked to doing well in school and getting into college. These girls started this step team in the sixth grade. And they were the founding class of the school at the time. So it was a unique thing to have a young step team.
Okay, so you come out of theater. Is it fair to say that step has some affinities with the kind of show that Blue Man Troupe is, where the performers are using all their bodies?
Maybe more like stomp, I would say. More like stomp. For me, the first time I ever saw the girls step, it was like a musical to me. You know, they express themselves through stepping, their fears, their hopes, and their dreams. And that's what happens in a great musical. Characters can't speak anymore, so they sing.
Okay, so 18 young women, none of whom are marquee names, from Baltimore, which for better or worse has a lot of troubling associations given the last few years. How do you raise money to make a movie like this?
I
assume you raised the money, or were one of the people.
Myself and my partner, Stephen Cantor, we raised all the money. Impact Partners is one of our producers. They're incredibly amazing, amazing organization. They actually flew me out here last year for my first time ever. I had never even been to Sundance. This is my first feature documentary, and I pitched it to all of the supporters of Impact Partners. So that was really a great place to get started and gave us like a fire under us. You know, I think everyone is looking for stories of hope and resilience, especially coming out of our inner cities, Baltimore or any other. So, you know, I love to raise money for things that I believe in. And I call it like the phone call test. If I can't pick up the phone and pitch someone over the phone about why something should be made, why some piece of art should be in the world, then I don't do that piece.
I guess maybe we should start at square one a little bit. And what is the name of this school, and what how did it come to your attention? The Baltimore School for...
It's called the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. We call it BLISS for short. I have been making short films about first-generation students going to college for about 10 years now, and girls' education. It's the Baltimore Leadership School is part of a larger network of schools called the Young Women's Leadership Network, which has 21 schools around the country. They are public, all-girls schools. The ones in New York, there are five in New York, they have 100% graduation rate and 100% college acceptance rate. I started filming the girls in Baltimore when they were 11 years old. Baltimore is my hometown, and I was making short films about them and what they were doing.
Do you still live in Baltimore?
I don't. I live in New York. But I'm there all the time. My whole family still lives there.
What? Now, okay, the march is going on outside. We assume we can't see anybody from the studios. But it's a very important day for women to express their views on what's happening politically. What do you see at this moment when a film is making its premiere and a man who has said so many disparaging things about young women has been elected, is now not just elected, he's inaugurated? What do you see at this moment? Why is premiering the film at a moment like this important?
Well, it's important for a lot of reasons. You know, for me, when we started this film, the stakes were impossibly high. Breaking a cycle, being the first in your family to go to college, being the first person in your family to do something is impossibly high stakes. And yet, somehow, in the last few months, those stakes have gotten even higher, and the finish line has moved for these young women. But one thing I have learned from watching these young women, from watching young people in public schools all across the country where I film, is this inner joy, this inner fire. It takes a lot to diminish that. And I just believe that what these girls are, what they have accomplished, what they will continue to accomplish, and what young people across this country can accomplish, no one, not one single person, can diminish that.
What was their reaction? I guess first hearing that this is a film that made it into Sundance, and then and then as they're on their way to Sundance, they hear that there is this demonstration today.
I mean, when we got into Sundance, I had to keep it secret for several weeks, and I went to Baltimore to tell them, and it was just the most amazing moment to tell them that they were about Sundance. They knew that it was a possibility. It was something I was shooting for. It was a goal. But they didn't really understand until they were here. So for them, just being here and being a part of this and meeting all these amazing people is and being around powerful women is what's important to them.
So who choreographs these performances?
The coach, Coach G, is the choreographer. She actually – so we follow the girls in their senior year. And their process of being the founding class of the school, the first in their families to go to college, and also to try striving to be a championship step team. And it's all connected, you know, doing well in life and doing well in step. It just came to mean it just was such a interconnected thing. And Coach G did all the choreography and just turned the team around and gave them meaning and purpose. And she is really one of these girls as well.
Okay. It sounds as if what you're saying is that with enough determination and with enough support, young people can achieve their dreams. So I have to ask, I'm sitting next to Rick Bruff, who is an amazing journalist. Do you think he could ever learn step? Do you think we could have Rick being that kind of local reality about triumphing?
I'm still working on the Lindy.
I think anyone can step. I think you just have to have good teachers. And I think that it really is, as I said, it's all interconnected. A great teacher who looks you in the eye, who says, I believe in you, that you can do this, makes all the difference in the world.
Okay, Park City, you heard that. And Rick is going to be held to that.
Yeah, oh yeah. The school, how does a student get into the school? I assume this is not just for the immediate neighborhood. So what is the entry
by lottery
procedure?
It's lottery, and it is for the immediate neighborhood. Oh. It's an inner city Baltimore public charter school. So I've been to that lottery many times and watched parents' faces fall when their kids don't get their daughters don't get into the school. But
there was a film here at Sundance a few years ago about a program where high school students went to Africa And it was an extremely successful program, and it turned these kids' perceptions of the world around. The tragedy there was that for lack of funding, that at least at the time the film was released, that program was discontinued. Baltimore is struggling financially all the time. How do we know there's going to be a STEP program 2 years from now? I guess they can't cancel something that's been made into a film.
The school is a huge success. They graduated their founding class last year. 100% of the girls were accepted to college. Baltimore, while it may struggle, when something works, they are completely behind it. People in Baltimore care.
That's something that our audience should know about women's sports, whereas, you know, we find in men's sports that a lot of men are looking at a career as a professional athlete. A lot of women who are very good athletes, really accomplished athletes, are also very good students. And there's been, you know, a record of academic achievement among women athletes that is entirely different from what we found among male athletes in high school and college.
Yeah, I mean, there's a GPA requirement to be on the STEP team. You have to have a 2.0 or higher. If you don't come to school that day, you don't come to STEP practice that day. So there is no question that a extracurricular activity, whether it's stepping or robotics or anything that keeps kids connected to school and that is not academic, can really improve their GPA and their success in the future.
Can you give us a little taste of the three girls at the center of the film, the characters here? Tell us a little about the trio.
So the entire team is incredible. Picking the three stories to focus on was very difficult. What attracted me to the STEP team, besides their incredible talent and charisma, was the fact that it attracted girls of every, you know, that ran the whole spectrum. So we had everybody from our valedictorian, Corey Granger, who says at the very top of the film, "I'm going to Hopkins and I need a full ride," who is very academic and very a little bit shy, but when she steps, this whole new person comes out of her. To the captain and founder of the STEP team, a young woman named Blessin, who the prior year, her junior year, missed 53 days of school and had a 1.1 GPA, but was, you know, the leader of the team. And then Tayla, who has a great line in the beginning of the film where she says she's not Beyonce, she's just a notch down from Beyonce. She's incredible, incredible confidence. And her mother, Maisha, is just one of those moms that's at step practice every day. And she's actually a corrections officer. She wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go to work every day. Mm. And she reminded me so much. I don't know if you remember during the riots in Baltimore, the image that was on CNN every 5 seconds of that mother pulling her son out of the riots and smacking him over the head. And when I saw that, I said, those are my mothers. Those are the mothers at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. They would do that exact same thing.
I hope there's not too much smacking over the head. You know, even it doesn't contribute all that much. I don't want to offend anybody who uses corporal punishment in Utah, but, you know, the results are not always that good.
Hmm. Well, the events that of the film, how much of that overlapped with the headline making events in Baltimore?
Well, I was filming in their junior year when Freddie Gray was killed, but I did not. It's just the launching pad for our story because we really focus on senior year. I didn't include anything from junior year. But for me, as someone who was born and raised in Baltimore, and when I watched my hometown burn on television and I was hearing Baltimore was the most dangerous city in America, I felt very protective of my hometown because I knew of the amazing things that were happening there because I knew about these girls and I knew about this school and I knew about the STEP team. And it just gave me like a real fire to tell the story now.
Yeah, it seems like any time one of these incidents explodes in Baltimore or Ferguson or another city, there's just this image of there must be civil war breaking out over this entire town, and as you said, that kind of image just, you know, exploding on cable TV.
But I feel like it was a concentrated area where this occurred in Baltimore, but it made it seem like from TV like it was everywhere. And And the girls in the film say, you know, it wasn't we felt like it wasn't fair because they showed the bombs and the cars and the buildings on fire. But what they didn't show were the people coming out and cleaning up the streets afterwards the next day and protecting each other and neighbors checking on each other. And they said that's what really Baltimore is about.
What kind of in Baltimore, how is winter?
It's not like this.
How often, if anything, do you get snow?
We actually got a ton of snow last year during filming, and we had all these snow days, and so we weren't filming at school, so we had to make arrangements for practices, and one of their competitions got postponed because of snow, so it really did affect us last year, and it was surprising how much snow we got there. The girls are fascinated by all the snow.
Well, there's a lot of it. Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for coming in. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah,
let me do a quick rundown of some of the opportunities to see Step, and you've got your premiere today, 5:30,
yes,
over at the Prospector, and Sunday at you're over in the Egyptian. You're down to Salt Lake for a showing, and next Thursday back to the Egyptian in Park City, and you wrap up Saturday with a showing at the Temple Theater. So, Amanda Lippitz, congratulations for you and your team.
Thank you.
As we said, it's like herding cats, but good luck.
It is like herding cats.
Good luck with all that.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
This is Tim Henney.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Join us for The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. after NPR News.
Brought to you in part by the doctors at the Park City Specialty Clinic, Park Meadows Country Club, Chateau Recovery, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, and Destination Hotels Utah.
KPCW Classified Show. Brought to you in part by the Candy Erickson Foundation and Four Mountain Advisors, bringing art and science to ski mountain resorts.
Wyndham Vacation Rentals is happy to continue our support for KPCW and the Park City community. Wyndham Vacation Rentals has been in business for over 30 years in nightly vacation rentals and property management with a range of services for our owners and guests. 649-6606 or online at wvrparkcity.com.
And welcome back to the Sundance Reel on Saturday morning. With we can occasionally see a few demonstrators trudging up Sweet Alley, and one guy on skis was going down Sweet Alley. but for now, we have a young actress from the film Landline, Abby. And I was at the showing last night, and Abby and everybody else wowed the audience. with the film from and Cooper taught me it's not Gillian Robespierre, it's mm-hmm. Gillian.
It's Gillian.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that a real name, Gillian Robespierre?
Yes.
You serious?
That's all I've heard. It's a real name.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, talk about wanting to see Obama's birth certificate.
Well, This is the film about a dramedy about a family in mid-90s New York. And Abby, you're the from the perspective of the younger daughter in this family, what the hell is all going on with all your relations here? Tell us about the story a little bit.
Yeah, so I think it centers around a family who's pretty dysfunctional, or they're at least at a dysfunctional time right now. But yeah, I play a 17-year-old girl named Allie who finds out that her dad's been cheating on her mom. And at first I try to keep it to myself and spy on him at his office and try to figure the whole thing out. And then eventually I tell my sister, and everyone kind of connects in their own way. And it was before the divorce happened, before the cheating. I think everyone in the family was leading their own separate life, separate from one another. So oddly enough, the divorce brought everyone in the family together in the end. Yeah.
Let's hear it for divorce.
Woo!
But Abby,
yeah.
Explain the title.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, are there any families in independent film that are not dysfunctional?
It's a great question. last night, someone asked us what the significance of the title was at the panel, and Gillian said that right off the bat, she wanted to set a tone of the 90s, and even before anyone saw the film. And obviously, we weren't texting, and there wasn't social media in the film because it was based in the 90s. So yeah, she just wanted everyone to get into that mindset right off the bat. And no, I don't think that there are any functional families.
Landline is a fact for people before cell phones. Is that what?
Yeah,
that's the sort of communication medium of the era.
Yes,
you're still on a landline.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't have a landline. Do you have a landline?
No, I do not have a landline.
Can we ask an indiscreet question? Were you born in the 90s?
96.
Wow. it's you're barely old enough to drink.
Yeah, barely.
So legally, you are called a millennial.
Yes.
How do you like that?
I mean, I think millennials get a lot of crap. but yeah, I try not to identify as one. I mean, I definitely have social media and... I take part in that, but at the same time, I try not to indulge myself in that too much, because I think it hinders real connection. But I take part in that.
So, what had you done before this film as an actress?
I've done three other movies, and one episode of Law and Order when I was 15, so I was still in high school. Mm. Yeah.
What'd you play in Law and Order?
I played a girl named Hannah Webster, and she kills her dad's girlfriend because
that's
her dad's cheating on her mom.
That's pretty dysfunctional family.
I know. It's the same sort of thing, except I don't kill anyone in Landline.
Yeah, you were a
but
perp.
There's
okay.
Cheating. Yeah.
Yeah. If we can take a pause for just a second,
yes.
Abby and David, and we've got our roving reporter, Renee Bodley, down on Main Street, and just to tell us a little of how things are shaping up. With the demonstration,
if you want to hear it.
All right, Renee, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Rick and gang. It's a busy day here on Main Street. The snow's coming down. It's slushy. People should definitely put on their boots and their jackets and gloves and hats. You're going to need to stay warm out here. Right now, there's probably a couple hundred people gathered at the Wasatch Brew Pub parking lot. People are working their way up Main Street. There are still cars on Main. City had said they would shut down Main Street once the march starts going, and that will be a rolling closure as the march moves down Main Street. The march is supposed to start pretty soon here in about 25 minutes at 9 o'clock. Head down Main Street, take a right on Heber Avenue, and then a left into the flagpole parking lot at the bottom of Sweet Alley, where there will be some speeches and a rally. I understand Chelsea Handler's leading the march along with Park City Team Mayor Maya Levine, a lot of Park City Team Council folks involved. It's really a great scene out here.
All right. Anything that people should be aware of if they're coming in to participate in the march?
Oh, great question, Monica. Yeah. The traffic's bad. We understand that is bumper to bumper on 224. Don't even try to get up on Marsac and make that left onto Deer Valley Drive. They've shut off the right lane of the road. That's an express lane for the buses. So that means the buses really are the best way to get up here. You can carpool and get to Richardson Flat and take a bus from there. Those buses will leave every 10 minutes. They transfer at the Eccles Center. So either get someone to drive you up here and get as close as they can to drop you off on Main Street, or go to one of those park and ride lots and shuttle in. I have a friend down in Salt Lake who just texted me and said the traffic going up I-80 is really bad. And yep. So she's unfortunately not going to make it up to March.
Yeah, we heard there's a lot of traffic there. And backpacks, are those allowed?
Yeah, they did text out an alert to all the marchers saying backpacks and big bags, they don't want you to bring them. I assume that's for safety measures. It's really filling up here at the Brew Pub parking lot. There are police around. Peaceful scene. People seem to be having fun. There are some backpacks, but I know that they don't want you to bring them. For text alerts, text March on Main, all one word, to 888-777, and that will get you updates. They may be late starting this March. I don't know. I'll keep you posted if that's the case.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon, Renee. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Monica. Bye.
Speaking of landlines, we'll just establish our landline connection again. We're talking with Abby Quinn, and two other ladies came in, and they said, we're with the same movie. And actually, they look like they're in the same family. Actually. I wanted to ask Gillian Robespierre if you worked with Jenny Slate, who is here, with a Sundance film a couple of years ago, Obvious Child. And is Jenny your muse?
I'm not shy. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I have to inch into the mic. Yeah, she's wonderful. I love collaborating with Jenny from the page to the set to hair, makeup, everything. It's just a pleasure to collaborate with her and write for her, and I just want to do it till we're old and gray.
And has Abby been promoted to co-muse?
Yes, of course.
Did it help Abby wanting in that there is kind of a, you know, the family resemblance here with Jenny? And
yeah, you know, when I watch movies, I hate when families don't look alike or sound alike, and they're, you know, just two famous actors slammed together for no good reason except trying to sell a movie. But Abby and Jenny not only have beautiful curly locks, but they also have beautiful chemistry and are wonderful actors.
Somebody talk.
Okay, great. Okay. How'd you raise money for this?
We worked with a production company called Odd Lot and Route One, and we sold Obvious Child here at Sundance 3 years ago, and worked with the lovely A24, and it sort of changed my life, and I was able to go out to LA from New York and sell Landline and work with a company who wanted to hire me as the director and writer, and Elizabeth Holm to co-write and produce and make this movie and support us all the way through.
Yeah. Also, is that A24?
No, A24, we sold Obvious Child to.
Right. That was your distributor.
That was the distributor, and then Odd Lot was the company that helped us develop the script for Landline.
I have to ask you a question. Gillian Robespierre is a fantastic name.
Gillian is also a great name.
Is that your real name?
It is my real name. I didn't change it.
Wow. So your name is really Guylaine, the French name of Gillian is Gillian, excuse me.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's a fantastic name.
Do you realize
that people spend years trying to invent names like that?
I know. But I don't believe there's any relation to Maximilian Robespierre from the French Revolution.
Unless you cross me. In case the audience does not know who Maximilian Robespierre was, he sent many people to the guillotine before he went there himself.
It's actually guillotine? No.
Yeah. Guillotine.
I know.
Guillotine.
Let's not discuss Robespierre too much before the demonstration.
Hey, this is a capital punishment state, so, you know, there may be people who want to bring the guillotine back.
Oh, God.
So Jenny, talk about how did working with or bonding with Abby as a pair of sisters, and how did... how did you function here? Is it, and you really come across as, you know, a pair of realistic, you know, fun siblings. I saw the picture last night. And then you've got Edie Falco and John Turturro as parents. So how did this family function under Gillian's direction?
Thank you. I think, you know, first of all, we came in with a really strong script that Gil and Liz wrote for us. But I think with me and Abby, what's interesting is we both do have siblings, but I think we have pretty peaceful and loving relationships with our siblings. And so you're taking a little bit of what you know from that bond in the real world and the depth of that bond, and also the drive that you have as a performer to create something new. And that's really risky, especially, you know, Abby is a really gentle, sweet young lady, and it's horrible to have to tell her to shut up. But I do think those also, like, in-between scene moments when you're saying, I'm really sorry, I just yelled at you, are the things that make a real bond, that help performers trust each other. And, you know, I'm very close with Gil, so when she tells me to do something, even if I feel that, you know, I'm stretching myself as a performer, I think those are the growing pains that you need to make something unique.
There are a pretty fair a number of moments here with the characters kind of dancing or dressing up as California raisins for a Halloween parade. So it seems like Gillian, like you, the story has its serious moments, but you also let us watch these guys kind of having fun. Just, you know.
For sure. Pardon me. Jenny was in a bouffant for half of the shoot. And she
looks, a garbage bag.
She looks great, but yeah, that bouffant took a long time. And garbage bags. And yeah, I think the idea is always to sort of balance and ride the line of comedy and drama. I feel like in real life, that's what we do. One second, we can be crying hysterically over a loss, and then something will just trigger in your hysterically laughing, and I think that's what real life is like. So we wanted to try to capture that and make it, you know, fake.
You probably saw the story in the New York Times that reported what a lot of us know already, that having a successful film at Sundance doesn't mean you're going to have, even if you have a distributor, doesn't mean the film's going to make money. How did your previous film do, and what did the success or the whatever happened in the marketplace with that do for you?
Well, the previous movie was a romantic comedy with an abortion as the storyline, so I think everyone was a little nervous that people weren't going to were going to protest it. But we played for 14 weeks in New York City at Angelica Movie Theater, and realizing how much love and support people had for the film and what we were trying to say, and Jenny, and it really was successful, and I think it did really well. And it allowed me to go, you know, make it my second movie.
You were asked last night, I think, about, you know, how much effort you went to. I see our time is running out, folks.
See you at the march.
Yeah.
That's right.
Let me use the time we got to remind people when they can also see Landline, and that's Sunday afternoon at the Redstone Cinema, and Next Chance in Park City is Wednesday at the Library Center Theater, and Friday at the Egyptian Theater. So Abby Quinn and Gillian Robespierre and Jenny Slate, thank you for coming in the snowy weather.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
Thank you.
Hi, this is JP, rental and repair manager for Cole Sport, a local KPCW supporter. Our ski and snowboard tune center is ready to go with precision tuning equipment from Montana of Switzerland and wax supplies from Swix and Wend. Open daily with overnight service at four locations, let's have another great season in Park City. Cole Sport, expect the unexpected.
Hey everyone, this is Gary Miller, Olympic Alpine Ski Coach, with this week's Sports Talk. Hydration is undoubtedly the most overlooked element of performance in any sport. Even professional athletes battle with the simple task of making sure they've had enough liquid intake to maintain proper hydration. We've all watched football or basketball games where an athlete will collapse on the ground, squirming in pain due to cramps from dehydration. Even though us mountain folk are a little better at hydrating by virtue of living at altitude and in a drier climate, 75% of all Americans suffer from dehydration. Just a little physical activity and the human body can lose 4% of its water, impacting performance by 20 to 30%. If you're not acclimated, headaches, cramps, joint pain, and even nausea can set in quickly. First, at every ski destination, make sure to drink lots and lots of pure mountain spring water. Second, start every day with 2 to 3 glasses of water before breakfast. And finally, every time you come to the lodge for a bathroom break, drink another glass or two of water. Worse than a yard sale on the slopes is a splitting headache from dehydration, so drink like a fish. Sports Talk is sponsored by Team Schlope Real Estate and Skis on the Run.
And we're back. We have a director and two actresses from the film that had a, I think it had a successful premiere last night at the Eccles. It's called Novitiate. And we have the director, Maddie Betts, and two of the actresses here, Leona Liberato and Rebecca Diane. And it's a little difficult to recognize you ladies at first because you're not in habits. So you can go a little bit incognito in Park City and still be a hit in this movie. Maddie, give us a little orientation because, you know, you're in Utah, the Mormon state, so there's not many of us that might know what a novitiate is.
Okay, funny you should ask. A novitiate is, or the movie is about the training process to become a nun, and particularly in the 1960s, and there was a two-stage process that was quite rigorous. And it started as you started as a postulant and then graduate to the second level of tutelage, which is in the novitiate. So the film really centers on one young girl who's in this training process to become a nun that gets increasingly challenging.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I come from a family with lots of priests and nuns. And I was also educated by priests and nuns until I was expelled from Fordham Prep in the Bronx, which was the best thing that ever happened to me. What did you think would be, Maggie, did you write the script also?
Yes, I did.
And tell me how the script started and why this subject is important to you.
The script started because I sort of happened upon a biography of Mother Teresa that was all about her relationship with her husband, God. And I didn't know prior to that that nuns were married to God, and I didn't know that the relationship was literalized and that God was personified as like a man and a husband. And I didn't know that their relationships could be so volatile and intense and like totally similar to the most intense, passionate love relationships I've had. So that was like really interesting to me. And then as I started doing more research, the two things thematically that came up the most were the experience of training to be a nun in the novitiate and Vatican II having this enormous impact on anybody who was.
So how do you cast something for this? Because even among Catholics, it's not that same experience anymore. It's not. It's at least the lived experience of Catholics is not the same as, you know, being the bride of Christ and what that you, which is what you're referring to. How do you cast and how do you take an actress into that to be able to actually perform that?
It's funny
camera.
You should ask. Yeah. It's mainly about the girls that I cast were mainly women who had a tremendous capacity for passion and love, and you could kind of feel that with them, you know, the types of women who probably knew or understood like very, very intense love relationships, because that's really like the girls' relationships with Christ is really the substance of what the movie's about, and I don't think you need to be Catholic or religious or anything to understand that, but that, you know, that's the hardest part, is a person who has the capacity and who can understand being in love at that level then could probably easily slip into the sort of more like attributes of the whole world. And so these young ladies and all the rest of them seem to in various ways express that to me.
Because the other side, if I can just say one more thing. The other side of that is the vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience, which seem to be a willful agreement to be in a subservient position. Obviously, you didn't take that path in this film, or did you?
No, it is about the vows of chastity, poverty, and obedience, but that is a sort of separate thing from the intensity of the love relationship, or is separate or coinciding or complementary. But I didn't necessarily see those two things as separate. I mean, chastity obviously means that you're not going to have a relationship with anyone other than God. And poverty is just a life without materialism and possessions. And obedience is a lot of the relationship, as in love as you are, is also about serving and about putting yourself in a subservient position to him.
Can we hear from the actresses? Tell me about playing a role like this. This is Rebecca Dayan.
Yeah, and you're kind of the person, sort of the mysterious outsider who transfers from another order.
Yes. Well, it was really interesting from the beginning of the process. I had no idea of anything religious, so I started reading a lot of books that Maggie sent me, and it's funny that she says that it was this capacity for passion and love that she was looking for into actresses, because I was all focused about getting everything right about understanding what it meant to be a nun and what it meant to be religious, and through reading those books, I saw exactly what she's explaining, is that all the testimonies of all these young nuns is always about their almost, I mean, their immense love for God and how they're ready to sacrifice anything. And I felt that I could definitely understand that and relate to that.
And Liana, you are one of the group. I keep having this temptation to say one of the platoon.
We're the postulants.
Yeah.
That's what we were.
That's platoon is Utah speak for postulant.
Yeah,
we are in.
Oh,
we are near.
Well,
you know.
We were in a platoon.
certain similarities. The picture kind of feels like a boot camp movie.
We actually went through nun camp.
Did you?
Yes, we did. We had like a week and a half before shooting where there was an actual, she used to be a nun, who came and taught us all the prayers and sign language and was able to answer all of our questions and everything like that. It was really cool.
You know, it's interesting hearing about this film because I recently became aware of a project involving a nun at a Christian site in the corner of Iraq, Syria, and Turkey, who is guarding that site with a shotgun.
Oh, wow.
And keeping people away. The working title of this film, it's a doc, is called Nun with a Shotgun, but she is alone. Look, that should sell it immediately.
I mean, yeah, it's sold. And this,
this is a nun living on the border of Turkey and Syria near Iraq,
wow,
where they still speak Aramaic, which is the language that Jesus spoke, which these Christian communities that are now threatened with extermination speak. So I think you're in a groove here. So this sounds very, very good. How did you get anyone to fund this project, Maggie? How do you put, you know, independent film is always about putting a budget together.
It just takes a long time. I mean, I don't talk about investors so much just because it's sort of not information that we share that much. But it's just a hustle. You just have to sort of like keep at it. But yeah, independent films in general. This is my third project. It's a lot of work.
Can we ask the actresses why did you take these roles? What drew you to the roles?
I mean, when I first met Maggie and she first sent me the original script, I was immediately taken by the story. But also, I was just ready to work with. I mean, it's funny that I should say that on the day that we have a women's march, but you know, it's a female writer director, female DP, an entire female cast, and there was no way I was not going to be in this movie. And it was also definitely one of the most interesting roles I've
Just one quick question. Are women moving into the producer's role to a greater degree? It used to be that the men were the money people. Are women also breaking into that?
Yeah. I mean, it seems to be sort of a trending theme right now, mainly pay equality between genders. And it's brought up so much now that I think there's, rightly so, an emphasis to kind of bring more women producers and women creators, give them sort of more of an opportunity to make films just because it's gives you a broader spectrum of stories being told. But yeah, there are a lot more women producers.
Yeah. Our time is coming to a close here, but Novitiate has the next showing in Park City is Sunday at the Redstone, Wednesday at the Prospector Square Theater, and let's see, next and the final in Park City is Saturday at the Mark. So, Leona, Maggie, and Rebecca, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.